Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week is the last of our Meet the Fellow series. Liam Fisher is head of TalkSport and was announced as a fellow at last year's Radio Academy Festival. I chat to him about his love of sports and sport journalism and his career highlights so far. But firstly, I asked him how he felt when he heard the news that he was to be made a fellow.
It was an amazing honour and utter surprise as well. It was fantastic to be there to have Scott Taunton, my boss, say lots of nice things about me and the work that I've done in sort of 20 odd years of working in audio. It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, he reeled off some of the names that I'd sort of signed over the years as well. It was fantastic to think of lots of those people that I've sort of sat trying to convince to do radio shows with whichever brand I'm working with at the time as well. It was great. And to be in that kind of company of so many fantastic people who've been involved in audio for years and years and years was just, as I say, it's just a tremendous honour.
Tell me about where your love of audio and radio started.
So I used to get subjected, probably the wrong word, but as a sort of 7, 8, 9 year old, we used to live in the middle of nowhere. And I used to have to get sort of driven to school, to be able to sort of get there. And my mum used to put on the Today programme every day. So I used to listen to Sue McGregor, Brian Redhead, all these, fantastic kind of John Humphreys, fantastic names. And they would be talking about subjects that I had very little interest in, obviously, as a young boy. I would just, love it. And I'd love the craft of it. And I'd love how they sort of did different subjects. And obviously, even at that age, I was really into sport and I would love the sports bulletins on it and things. And from there, I really gravitated into listening to sport on the radio and just absolutely loving it and just being able for the commentators to be able to paint pictures with words and things. And it's grown from there. And I've always loved it. And having done a bit of TV over the years, I've always preferred radio and audio. I've always liked the instantaneousness of radio and of the ability to do things so quickly and on the hoof and be able to react to it. The fact that it feels so personal, the connection with the audience is even greater than anything else, I always think. So it's from there that it sprung up, and yeah, particularly anything to do with sport that on the radio was always a thing as I grew older I gravitated to.
Was it always sports journalism that you wanted to do?
When kids get to, 13, 14, 15, you're sort of told you need to choose something. You need to be picking something. And I had absolutely no idea at that point, as most kids don't. And my best friend said, I'm going to do journalism. And I was like, oh, I like, what's the, tell me more. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. It was good enough for you. He was really into newspaper journalism, which I was as well. Actually, I preferred the broadcast element. So I preferred the idea of sort of TV and radio and things. So I sort of gravitated more to there and had always had an interest in doing perhaps news and current affairs and that sort of side of things. But sport was always my real passion. That was always where I'd hoped I would one day kind of get to. And probably the timing was pretty good for me in the sense of I finished university in 1999 and TalkSport launched in sort of 2000 as well. So I had the ability to come straight out of university, work at various places, and there was this brand new radio station launching, which didn't really know too much over what it was, but was still finding its feet, but was desperate for people with an interest in sport to come and join it and answer the phones and produce and kind of get involved with research, etc. And that's how it all began.
Have you always been sporty? I mean, was it that you loved watching sport or did you play sport as well?
Yeah, I used to love playing, particularly football, but did used to love watching sport as much as I possibly can. I still do at the moment. I can get away with it now even more because obviously it's my job. So I have to watch darts because, it's very
important. There's no shame in watching the darts.
Exactly. Who doesn't watch the darts these days?
I love it. I love the darts.
Exactly. It's fantastic. Who knew that darts on the radio would ever work? But we've proved them wrong. I love just watching sport. And, weirdly now I'm seeing it through the eyes of my kids. So my daughter is into playing sport, but less into watching sport. My 11-year-old is really into playing sport and a little bit into watching sport. But the 8-year-old loves playing, watching, and he also loves listening. So now it feels like I've trained them to do this, but he actually listens to TalkSport every night. So he's listening to TalkSport and commentaries. And he will say to me, he'll get the fixtures up and he'll say, and I'll say, look, we haven't got any games on tonight. There's no matches. And he'll point to something on my phone or whatever that says, oh, what about this game? It's, Melbourne against Sydney. Have you not got this one? I'm like, no, that's in Australia. That's kicking off at 2 a.m. No, we don't have that. Like, well, why not? I want that one. So he just loves it. And he's definitely got what I had. It's weird sort of seeing it again through his eyes of that just like love for radio and love for sport on the radio, which given that obviously that generation are so used to being able to tap a device and be able to watch anything they want to watch, get old clips of things, watch endless kind of YouTube videos. He really enjoys that thing as well when he goes to bed at night, sort of a comforting thing as well. So yeah, I'm sport mad, unfortunately.
Tell me how your career started then. You left university and you've worked for TalkSport for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah. I finished university in 99 and I did, having done a degree in broadcast journalism, which basically trained me in TV and radio. That was at Nottingham Trent. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a brilliant course. Fantastic, experiences and things that I still carry with me to this day over things that I kind of learned. I left there and thought, right, I'm going to go straight to London, make my fortune, earn loads of money, get jobs straight away. But before I do that, I'm going to take a bit of time out. And I just worked, this is a dated reference that some listeners will get, some won't, but I worked at Blockbuster Video. And I worked there for probably about a few months longer than I should have done, about 8-9 months. I was just sort of working there, just sort of getting some money and just working out, ready to make the move to London. And it got to the point where somebody said to me, you're really good at doing this. You should run for, area manager of Blockbuster Video. And that was the point I thought, I need to leave.
I've got to get out of this.
Back in my hometown down in Salisbury in Wiltshire. So then I moved to London and I moved without a job and I freelanced in London, including doing temp jobs as well. So I worked in a post room in Canary Wharf before the other buildings were around it. It was just the one building there. And at the same time, I was working at LBC, answering the phones. I worked at a radio station called Liberty Radio, which was over in Knightsbridge next to Harrods. And I worked there reading the news as well. So I'd do ridiculously long days where I'd be at Liberty at 7 a.m. for an 8 o'clock bulletin. And then I'd work at LBC answering the phones on Giles Brandreth and Michael Van Straten, all these are kind of old sort of LBC names, Pete Murray. And I'd finish there at 1 a.m. And then I'd go back and work in the post room like the following day at over at Canary Wharf and things like that. And I was just trying to, find enough work in and around London, bits and pieces at places like Sky News. And I worked there for a long time. And somebody suggested to me TalkSport. And I didn't really know TalkSport that well at that stage. It only launched in the January. This was sort of in the September in 2000. And I came in, did a couple of work experience shifts. I just utterly loved it. There was lots of potential work, answering the phones and things. And quite quickly, because of the way that it was at that stage, there was loads of opportunities. And within about 18 months, I was sort of producing a show, which was just an absolute dream for me to be able to do, and producing people that are still in and around TalkSport today, like Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs and Adrian Durham and some Alan Brazil and people like that. I began sort of working with. I mean, from there, I was doing those sorts of things for a good few years, and then began to get experiences like going to the World Cup, went to the 2006 World Cup, and carried on learning and getting experience. And in 2013, when the program director left, had enough experience that I thought I could have a shot at running it kind of full time. I was probably way behind the other people in the running for the position, but I'm told that I interviewed like fantastically well, knew the station inside out. I was probably a cheaper option. I'm probably aware of that as well. But yeah, they had loads of faith in me and they gave me the job of running TalkSport. And in 2013, it was just TalkSport. There wasn't the sort of the breadth of things that we have now sort of today. Did that for a few years and then moved on from there in 2013 to work across the new digital radio stations that we were launching, TalkSport 2, Virgin, which was being relaunched from a train, and Talk Radio as well, which was being kind of revived as a current affairs and politics kind of lifestyle station. So worked on that for a few years as well. In the meantime, worked in Times Radio, helped start that up with Stig Abel and Tim Lavelle, who became obviously program director for Times Radio. And in the last couple of years, I've been seconded back to TalkSport. And I think albeit that it sort of felt like, well, I'd been there and I'd sort of done that, it was still a fantastic challenge because TalkSport had sort of grown in the meantime. Mm. It had TalkSport 2 alongside it. There was lots of podcasts and on-demand content. We were dipping our toes into this random world of visualization and not only listen to Alan Brazil, but you can now watch Alan Brazil as well. Who'd want anything more? So it was a great sort of opportunity to go in there, create loads of video content. And it felt like there was things that I could do in terms of the expertise and knowing the brand so well to revive it. And that's the way it's been over the past couple of years. We've been, you know, record figures last year, and we're sort of going from strength to strength with everything that we're kind of doing. Olympics, which we did for the first time last
year. I wanted to ask you about that because that was a huge coup. Yeah, can't talk. It was a huge coup.
Yeah,
I think that's how you say it.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
It is. I mean, I think the thing is, the Olympics is one of those things where you sort of think of it as, oh, it's massive, and it's massive for those 2 weeks. But because obviously it's multi-event, it's predominantly obviously in Paris, but it's all over the place as well. And it, for us as a commercial radio station, it's, you know, it's as long as it is wide, you could do every single sport you want to kind of do, but there's only so much you can physically, financially do, plus have the capability to do. So we sort of did certain sports, but it was a big success for us. It was a fantastic thing to kind of do. And what I'm really proud of with that was, you know, having it on for the very first time it'd ever been on commercial radio outside of the BBC. BBC do a fantastic job with it, but that's in amongst everything else that they do as well, including kind of news and politics, etc., on 5 Live. But also in the lineup, it was the first time we'd ever had a sort of lineup which was predominantly non-white male. It was sort of 60-70% of the lineup came from either females sort of hosting punditry roles, people from different kind of diverse backgrounds as well, and which was fantastic for us to find, you know, to be in a position where we are having a sort of broader perspective within sport and dealing with some fantastic individuals, people like Tessa Sanderson and the like, who were kind of part of our lineup. Adam Jamili, who did an event at the radio festival last time out, one of those classic sportsmen who could have been very good in anything. He was nearly a footballer, then he turned to sprinting. But just a brilliant character who knows lots of the athletes and just can get us to places that, you know, exactly where you want to kind of be. But it was a great thing to do, and I think it was sort of testament to how far TalkSport had come from those very early days, way back in 2000, that I kind of vaguely kind of recall in terms of doing unofficial commentaries from hotel rooms, to where we are now with 450 games per season at the Olympics, doing live international cricket, we're doing the Lions tour this summer, etc. It's just a fantastic place for us to be.
Sport is something that people are very passionate about, and radio is something that people get very passionate about. Why do you think sport on the radio works so well? Because there are some sports that you'd think, I mean, we mentioned darts there, tennis as well, but there are some sports you just think, that's never going to work. but sport on the radio does work. Why do you think that is?
I think there's several things with it. I think firstly, lots of it is behind the paywall, dealing with like tough times at the moment, but to be able to watch all the sport that's out there, or the majority of the major sport that's out there, it's really difficult to do. You know, you've got to have several subscriptions, paying hundreds of pounds per month. There's a few people who really can sort of do that. So really, you've got to pick and choose your subscriptions and what you want to kind of focus on. There is so much sport out there as well. You cannot watch it all, even if you've got those subscriptions.
My husband tries.
We all try. There's lots of us who do try. I'm going to give it a damn good go. I think the Football World Cup, 104 games, might challenge even the most hard fan next summer. But we'll see. Inevitably, you cannot be by TV or by screen the whole time. You're going to be in the car, travelling somewhere. You're going to be doing the washing up, and you can't, like, you know, be watching at the same time or whatever. You're people at the gym, wherever it is, you're doing other things as well. So it's that. And I think the beauty of sport is it's of the moment. It's that shared experience as well. So you want to be watching it. You want to be listening to it. The moment England score that winning kind of penalty for that kind of shared thing, it doesn't work ever quite the same in that kind of highlight kind of capacity as well. And the thing for us has always been, and I think the thing with sport is not just the event itself, it's the bit after it as well. So it's England win a penalty shootout. You want that shared experience of like, speaking to your mates about it. You know, WhatsApp groups will be going wild. You'll be, you know, speaking to people or down a pub. Do you, you know, can you remember all those penalty shootouts we've missed or whatever it might be? And it's the same for us really with TalkSport. That's why the phone-ins and the sort of reaction from the pundits work kind of so well. And they're some of our most listened to kind of moments, is that bit, almost bit after the event, when everybody sort of gravitates for that sort of shared experience as well. And I think that's why sport is so fantastic. And I think why, particularly in the live space, with so much other things out there, including kind of some fantastic sort of sports podcast content, that live radio still does really, really well, and live TV will still do really, really well, because it's that shared experience at that particular point.
What have been the career highlights for you so far?
Lots. I mean, I'm really proud of like the stuff I've done outside of TalkSport as well, like launching Times Radio. I mean, I do feel like Times Radio, and I listen to Times Radio a lot. It's on in our household. My wife is a big fan of it as well. And we've, you know, got lots of our friends who've sort of converted to it as well. I'm really pleased and impressed with the sound and the feel of that station, how it's sort of finding its feet. And I think it does take a couple of years for it to kind of almost grow into its voice and how it, where its kind of place kind of sits and things like that. It's very rare that you ever find radio stations that have the same lineup that they started with. In launching Virgin, you know, relaunching Virgin as well, it was a sort of magical day, like from a train and being sort of part of that when that sort of came back. I think on air, it will be things like discovering people, delivering perhaps their sort of potential, whether it's been sort of unrealized elsewhere or they haven't had that opportunity. You know, Laura Woods was one person that sort of started out with us, you know, reviewing the papers and doing things like that on our breakfast show. And roll forward a few years, she's presenting that show and she's, you know, one of the stars, and she's gone off from us to be one of the major hosts on TNT Sport and ITV Sport as well. It's fantastic. We've got an individual who used to be chairman of, or used to own Crystal Palace, Simon Jordan, who I spoke to initially probably about 8 or 9 years ago about doing some radio, because I felt he was a different perspective on football. We had lots of ex-footballers around the station, lots of journalists. We never had anyone who actually owned a club, who paid these exorbitant wages to footballers, yeah, who sort of all these kind of things. And I thought it'd be a great perspective to have on as a regular show. And he's gone from sort of one show a week to now doing 4 or 5 a week for us. And he's fantastic. And he's one of the people that I always get people kind of coming up to me and sort of saying, oh, you know, I used to not like that guy, but he's fantastic and I can't miss his show and things. So I think finding those sorts of individuals is really, I really find kind of rewarding, and seeing people kind of grow and deliver their kind of potential. And the sporting events, I mean, when you're sort of standing on the outfield in St. Lucia before England play West Indies in a test, and we're doing live rights on location from out there, and you've got people like, you know, these amazing cricketers like Jimmy Anderson just walking by you as they're doing their warm-ups, and you're sort of stood there on the outfield as the broadcaster, is like a real kind of pinch me moment to go, This is better than a proper job, isn't it, really? I can't argue with this. If my young self leave me now, they'd be like, how have you managed that? You know. So yeah, there's lots. There's too many to mention. Thankfully, they always outweigh the lower moment.
What does the future hold for you, Liam, do you think, and also for TalkSport and radio in general?
I think for me, it is to tap into the new emerging like audiences and potential that we have out there. I think the visualization stuff that we're doing is really interesting, because I think we've noticed that since we've been broadcasting some of the shows on YouTube and now on smart TV, that there was a sort of sense of, actually, this might cannibalize our radio audience. This might stop people listening and they're going to start watching now instead. And it hasn't really done that. And in fact, it's probably grown those audiences as well. And my sense of it is that it's a really good gateway into radio listening, is it shouldn't really cannibalize the audience. This is basically probably an audience that is largely consuming lots of their media in smart TV, YouTube kind of space. Mm-hmm. Eventually, at some stage, they are going to go to have to listen on the radio because they're spending more time in the car or traveling or whatever reason. So actually, by making them aware of the TalkSport brand, familiar with the names, habitual kind of watching, they'll eventually become habitual listeners as well as watchers as well. So it moves people about. So I think, you know, for me, both personally and professionally, it's to sort of begin to really like tap into that and see what the potential kind of gain is for us. We're sort of dealing with like 3.6 million people who tune into us each week, roughly for about an hour a week. So amazing, like loyalty, which we have, is whether we can augment that audience even further with people who are watching us instead of listening, but also as well as listening as well, and really do that. And I think that would be the same answer for the broader like radio industry as well. That I think, you know, things like challenges that have sort of come along in terms of, you know, the ability for people to be able to watch anything they want on a screen wherever they are means that radio theoretically could have suffered, but it hasn't really seemed to have done that. And I think partly because there is, in sport, there is a endless stream of stories that radio and audio is very agile to react to quickly and really well with fantastic content. You know, I could see from the way Times Radio is doing recently and amongst all the stories from Donald Trump, which is almost endless and what's he going to do today kind of thing, that as bad as it is for the world sometimes, it is what people kind of want. They want to know what's going on and what does it mean for them, what does it mean for world politics and stuff. Radio still has that ability to be able to do that and will still be in kind of rude health, and it will, you know, things like podcasts further kind of augment that. And I think they give people that kind of ability to sort of deeper dives into kind of stories, and live radio alongside that gives them that kind of instant hit and kind of fix for it as well. So I think it's in really good shape, but I'd be saying to my guys as well, it's like, we should never be complacent. Never just think because you've got commentary of Man United against Liverpool that people are just going to come in their droves to kind of listen to it. How do we make it kind of stand out? How do we make it kind of memorable? How do we make it so you're going to share your experience with other people in a positive way? Oh, we always need to be striving for the best possible standards.
A big thank you to Liam Fisher, head of TalkSport, for being my guest. Next week on the podcast, you can hear what happened at the Foot in the Door event from Belfast, which is happening tonight, 19th of March. If you're going along, then have a great time and keep an eye on the Radio Academy website for details of more Foot in the Door events later this year. RadioAcademy.org. And a date for your diary is the ARIA's nominations, which will be live streamed on our YouTube channel on the 8th of April in the evening. I'll see you next week.